Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. And I just love this job because I interview the most interesting people on the planet. And tonight, I have a wonderful guest. Her name is Lorraine Corelli. And I want to spell it for you because it sounds Italian, but it's not necessarily. And the way she spells her name, just so you know, is C-U-R-R-E-L-L-E-Y, Lorraine Corelli. Lorraine Corelli, she's a poet laureate, and she actually is involved in the mental health field as well, and she's quite diverse in the things that she does. And I think that you might be the first poet laureate I've ever interviewed, Lorraine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Toni Quest. I'm excited and honored.
It's an honor. It's an honor to interview you. And in reading through your credentials, I know that you've been published in anthologies. You're actually going to be performing, and your work will be featured in a couple of things, a couple of exhibits, and I'd say expositions that are happening over the next couple of weeks, one of which is called Climbing the Walls. Tell me about what you'll be doing for Climbing the Walls.
Oh, Climbing the Walls. It's an invitation from Myra Mills, one of the co-founders, to curate, to guest curate Climbing the Walls June 10th. And I'm very passionate about that history, et cetera. So I was really excited about that invitation. So we just completed it, and it opens tomorrow. And it's part history, poetry, music, art, and it's an exhibit. It's multimedia, various gentry. So it's really exciting. And it opens on June 13th, and it goes from June 13th until September 13th. But Myra Mills and Jeremy Great like to say, and beyond. So I'm excited about that because it's a wonderful exhibit. I previewed it. I can't tell you too much, but I previewed it, and it's a wonderful exhibit. So you have various participating artists and various gentries, and some of the artists, I can mention some of the artists, Edward Corelli, an Ocean Morissette, who's a photographer, Katori Walker, who's a poet and actress, Sariaki Dutton. He's an instrumentalist, and Thomasine Felicioni. She's an actress. So there's quite a mix of people and gentries. And so it's really exciting.
You're in good company. They're in good company. So tell me something about what it is to be a poet. And, you know, it's funny, you know, people are poets and they don't know it right away. And I just think that everybody always has a different take on the process and how it comes to be. How did you end up finding your voice in poetry? When did you first find your voice in poetry?
Well, I first found my voice in poetry. I was in the fifth grade, and we would get homework assignments and class assignments, and I would write poems, and people in general thought I was pretty good at it, even at such a good young age. And I started writing essays in the sixth grade and participating in citywide school contests. But back to poetry, I discovered even in the fifth grade that I really loved it. I really loved it. I enjoyed it, and then the more people encouraged me and said that they liked it, I just continue. But my voice really came when I was able to say to myself out loud, I am a poet. I am a writer. I was 28 years of age.
Okay, that's young.
Yes.
You're a young woman.
But that's That's when I really felt that I had teeth. That's when I really felt that I had something to say. And I felt inside, that yes, I could finally say out loud to the world, I am a poet. I am a writer, and truly believe it.
Poetry, I learned, I'll say, in the eighth grade, eighth grade, that is to be recited, to be read aloud. Were you writing and reading, or did the reading aloud come later? What was your, how did you process everything?
When I was 28, I was invited to participate in a women's writing workshop, and it was called Gap Tooth Girlfriends. There were like eight of us, and we were invited by the founder, Alexis Javot. That's where I did a lot of creating, and as a result of being in that workshop, we received our invitations and opportunities to perform our work, and that's when I started actually performing, doing public appearances, around that time.
I have to ask you, and I ask a lot of people this question, usually just in conversation with other writers. Do you find that there's a special feeling when you're reading your own work? Do you feel that it comes alive when it really is coming out of your own voice, your own mouth? I'm curious about that, because people will, let's say, read something that you're published in and just read the words, and they'll have meaning, but when you say them aloud, do you feel that it actually changes its vibration, it changes its meaning to an extent, or maybe amplifies what you wrote?
Yes, I would have to agree with you wholeheartedly. I can speak from my experience. I write what I know. I write about my experiences. I write about what I see. And if it touches me, if it resonates with me, then I write about it, and I'm able to truly give voice to it, to put my heart, my soul, and my emotions in it, to bring it alive, because it has been living with me and it's a part of me. And I'm passionate about whatever it is I'm writing. So that's how I approach it. I'm not one of the writers or poets. I don't just throw anything on the page. Like I said, if it comes to me, and it's real.
How do you know it's real? I'm curious.
Okay, how do I know it's real? Because there is a voice inside of me, and it seems to me, yes, yes. Yes, and I know what that voice is. That is the voice of my ancestors speaking to me, because they direct me often in what I write and how I approach things, and the words that they gave me, they want me to write truth. They want me to write what's real. They want me to write what's going on inside of me. They will not be pleased otherwise. So I think poetry resonates best when you are reciting your own. Some people have the talent, and they have a gift for interpreting other people's work. Well, I can do that, but I am better, I feel, at reading or performing my own work. What about you? Does that resonate with you? Do you have the same?
I have done some poetry readings, and I was thinking about my first reading, which was I could say I've probably read things in high school and grammar school, and there are other people's poems, and I have also written some things when I found my voice in writing. But I'm curious as to what is it like, what is your process? You get a thought and you run straight to the computer and start to write it, or the pad and pencil or pad and pen? You know, do you write down little bits of things and then string them together?
You hit it right on the needle, right on the head. I write in bits and pieces. A lot of my things are bits and pieces. A thought will come to me. A sentence mm-hmm. will come to me. Mm-hmm. A phrase will come to me. Mm-hmm. And what I do everything in longhand.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes. I write in longhand. And then what happened, what's been happening in the past maybe, I'd say, year and a half, I've been able to go directly to my computer and write. And what I noticed that a lot of times it just flows. But I think that has to do with my having something to say. But I love working things out on paper. I'm a good scribbler and everything. I love working things out on paper. And so I have to hunt everywhere for the bits and pieces of paper to put everything together sometimes.
So what do you think again about writer's block? Let's talk about that. You know, because I know that there are writers that are going to listen to this interview. I just kind of know it. and I'm a writer. And it happens to most of us. It doesn't happen to everyone. But tell me why you said to me earlier, you said, I don't believe in writer's block. You don't believe in it.
Because I don't understand. I don't understand it. And my question to people who, poets and writers who say that they have writer's block, I have to ask, what does that mean? Does it mean that you want to write, but you're having difficulty getting started? Explain that to me, because I don't have that as an issue when it comes to writing. So for me, that doesn't resonate with me. That's why I say I don't believe it, because I truly believe in energy. I believe in this, in spirit. I believe that if you have something to really say at a given time, you should be able to it should flow right from you. It should just flow easily right from you. You should not have to sit and say, okay, I have to write something. I have to write something. I got to get some out. Yes, yes, yes. You should not have to go through that. I consider that torture.
I think it is very difficult when it happens, and I think that there are a lot of people that write. I know people who write for a living, and so they're going to go out and observe whatever, and then they have to report on it, and they have to write, and they have to write it fast.
Yes, yes.
They don't have the luxury of letting it flow. It's got to flow fast, and then it's got, you know, really, and there's a more structure to what they have to do, especially if they're writing press releases or they're reporting on an incident.
Yes, I know. As a journalist, because I've worked as a journalist before, and every once in a while I will do an article or something and some knit it. But even in that case, the process for me, I would interview the person, I would take notes, and then I return home and I breathe for about an hour or so. And then I'll settle myself in, and then I'll look at my notes and I'll say to myself, okay, these are notes. What is your approach? Where are you going from here? And then I'll start. I don't try to write. I don't try and write the whole piece at once. I just try to work my way through it. I might write a couple of paragraphs, and I said, okay, this has teeth. And then I'll move on. Or sometimes I'll just start writing from what I have, and then I'll just formulate everything. I'll just shape everything.
Interesting. Do you ever have a special topic that resonates with you that you just enjoy writing about?
Oh, yes. I enjoy writing about age. I enjoy writing about just life in general. I enjoy writing about nature. I enjoy writing about current events. I just enjoy writing about everything, but it all, but I use a different approach. Sometimes even with current events, it may not come out in an article, but it will find its way to a poem, or it'll find its way to a short story. You see, that's when a narrative poem comes in, because it's like a story, and it'll usually be maybe a page, page and a half, maybe 2 pages, a poem like that. But I write about any and everything.
Snoopy reciting also during, you know, the very foreseeable future for a poetry reading featuring you in Georgia, in Augusta, Georgia, through Poetry Matters Project. And you're the featured poet.
Aren't you on that bill as one of the features as well?
It's not about me, it's about you.
No, it's four of us. Stop it. It's four. I won't allow you to say that. I'll take over the show.
Okay, you can take over the show. It's okay. No, but okay. But the reason...
Now, there are four of us. Four featured poets from New York City. So I'm excited about that, because I'm interested, and especially for the past maybe three, I've always done collaborations, but I'm finding this period of my life, this is very, very interesting. So I'm eager to be in the company of my fellow colleagues and peers and poets. So I find this is exciting, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I am too, because it's really an honor to be on the same bill with you and the other poets, but it's really an honor to be on the same bill with you. And I was pleasantly surprised. No, I'm just a chick from Amerenik. That's why I call myself. You know, I don't put myself on any pedestals, because I'm just can't change who you are, you know?
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, poet laureate, that's wonderful. And it is an honor. So how does it feel? So, someone asked me very recently, what is a poet laureate? And I said to them, a poet laureate, it is like poet's royalty. It's like, it's beyond a PhD. It's like the king and queen of poetry when you become a poet laureate.
Oh, you are too generous and kind.
Hey, listen, I know some poet laureates, and you're in the same category. You know, I don't want to drop names. I've hugged a poet laureate. She didn't expect it. Her handler, and she had a handler, because no one was allowed near this woman, okay? And somehow, some way, I ended up giving her a really, really big hug, and she hugged me back. And, you know, I'm still basking in the afterglow. So poet laureate is a very, it's a serious thing. It's real. It's like the royalty of poetry.
I only became a poet laureate. The honor was given to me in April. In April, I was notified. So this is a recent title that I have, and I'm still settling into it, and I'm trying to navigate what it means. But what I know that it means and how it came about, I do know that an international group of peers, of my peers, from a committee. A committee of judges, what they did, they vetted me, unbeknownst to me, for over a year and a half.
Wow.
For over a year and a half. They searched from A to Z everything they could find about me. They interviewed people nationally about me, locally about me. And the result was I was honored with the title. So it's I take it seriously, and I am so honored. So it just means, it for me, it means giving back to my community. It means for me encouraging and spreading the good news, the great news, the joy of poetry, and encouraging emerging poets.
Mm-hmm.
So this is exciting. I mean, this is exciting in this respect. And it's also new to, you know, it's just also new to me. it was such a surprise that I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. And a friend of mine, she's a poet, the poet laureate of North Carolina, she just says, "Welcome, poet laureate." And she said, just to, along with my brother, Edward, who's a poet as well, Edward Carell, who's a poet as well, both told me just to enjoy it. And it's, you know, and Tony Quest, it's largely what I'm doing now. It's what I have been doing since 1980 is largely what I've been doing, producing and presenting poetry, feature poetry readings, open mics and writing workshops. And so it's a continuum, the way that I see it. It's just an extension of what I've been doing, but only this time the focus, I'm sort of put in the spotlight, and I'm not really accustomed to that. I'm not really accustomed to being in the spotlight because I'm...
He'll get used to it.
That's the thing that I'm sort of struggling with, and I'm like, okay, but I'm just not accustomed to that. I'm just accustomed to doing my work, what I do through my organization, Poets Network and Exchange, and the Bronx Book Fair. I'm just accustomed to working, to doing the work, putting things together, and pushing other writers and poets forth. And now this was presented to me, and as I stated earlier, I'm trying to navigate it. I'm trying to get a grasp on it.
Sounds
and I
like
don't,
process.
I handle, I try and I handle my own business. I hope that I will never, and even if I do, I'm not the kind of person, and I must say this, I don't ever foresee myself having something called, what was it you said, a handler?
Well, this is a poet laureate, and she's a really nice person. I never thought I'd ever meet her. But I'll tell you about it. But she had a handler, and she did a talk at a university, and that's the kind of thing that happens when you start reading your stuff publicly. People start to get to know you, and the next thing you know, you're going to places, and I guess it's relative to your life. It's relative to your life how you see it, how grandiose you want to see it. But being a poet laureate is a really grand thing.
I'm sorry for interjecting, but this is alarming. I want that touch. I want that personal touch. I don't want anyone speaking for me. I don't want if someone has something to say, because think of this. This is important to me. Because I remember when I was 15 and there was Nikki Giovanni. She was about 21, 22. She didn't have a handler, but she had a friend with her, just, you know, a friend accompanying her, you know, hanging out with her. And I was able to just go up to her and just say what I needed to say. And there was no one as a go-between. And I saw the care that she took with me, the interest. And people have dreams. People have dreams, and they respect, they have certain writers that they respect and admire. And I want to be there for them. I want to be the one to reach out and say, I'm here, I'm accessible. This is what you need. No, no, no. And I think it has a lot to do with who you are as a person, your character and your personality, and the other person. And sometimes, you know, you do develop such a large base that you do need people to assist you. But I don't see the need in a public space where you come to read for someone to act as a go-between and keep you away from the person.
Well, you never know. This
you
famous,
never know. I'm sort
famous
of struggling
last words.
With this.
And when she did her talk, there was a line and there was a handler, and you could buy her books, plural, but she was only giving one autograph per person. You couldn't really hang out there, and it was an interesting dynamic. I'll share that with you sometime.
I can understand that if it's a large crowd, but I'm thinking more so in an intimate space where there are very few people, and you know, you have an opportunity just to talk one-on-one. I'm not saying that you have to, you know, dedicate a whole evening to them, but I'm just saying, there's nothing like a nice, even if after you sign a book or something, there's nothing like a nice handshake or a photo op or something like that, or just a gracious thank you for coming and I'm so happy you bought my book. That's what I mean. I don't, when you say handler,
I'm going to be semi-facetious with you. I'm going to be semi-facetious, okay, about having a handler. All it takes is one stalker, Lorraine. one groupie stalker.
Now I understand.
Yes.
Now I understand.
And even someone that might be innocent like myself or whoever, to see her and I find myself in the hallway and there she is. What am I going to do?
I had to hug her.
I hugged her.
No.
Her handler
security.
Went crazy.
That's sort of security.
I'm just saying. You're a poet laureate.
Oh, okay. No. I understand that whole process.
Yeah. All it takes is one stalker.
Okay.
All it takes is one stalker.
That speaks to my inexperience. I haven't reached that yet, but
no, it doesn't take much.
I haven't reached that.
Trust
but,
me. In my book, Chapter 21,
yes.
I started getting stalkers because of Chapter 21.
Oh my gosh,
they read Chapter 21 and they know it's true. And that's when the stalkers came out. I'm just saying, it's really about you. I think that it's a quite an honor, okay? You're going to be a bit on the map in the next few weeks. You're going to be in Climbing the Walls. You're going to be also in the exhibit, in the reading, and featured work that they're going to feature for you in the exhibit, the event that's happening in Augusta, Georgia, through Poetry Matters Project.
I'm excited about both, and both require, I don't know how other people, everyone's process, but I know for me, I have a process. I prepare. I don't go into anything cold. I prepare myself. I settle myself. That's how I approach everything. If I know that I have a reading, I actually, in my home, I set up my music stand. That's what I usually drag with me. And I set my book or pad or whatever it is I'm reading from on it. And I actually have a rehearsal. I rehearse the pieces that I'm going to. It's important for me, for sight issues, et cetera, but it's important. So that's how I think it's out of, for me, I like to say it's out of respect. And whatever I do, I want to give my best. I feel that if you invited me to do something, then I want to give you my best.
What will you be? What kind of work came out of you poetically during this? The whole world is going through
COVID-19.
With the COVID-19, and also with the Black Lives Matters. Do you find that words flow?
Oh yes. Yeah. Oh yes. Oh yes.
Tell me about that.
And the exhibit that's coming up, Climbing the Walls for COVID-19, and Juneteenth, with Mara Mills and Jeremy Brett at the Studio Theater in Exile. A number of my pieces will be appearing. Like I have a piece appearing. I'm going to be reciting a piece, an actual performing a piece when it opens up tomorrow. It's going to be a video piece of me performing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's in the exhibit. So that's a COVID-19 poem. Also, I have been writing a number of COVID-19 poems, and two of them have already been published by it's an online publication sponsored by Library in New Jersey that I participated in. So those were published online and on their website. So I've been writing COVID-19 poems, but they haven't been, I'm going to sit down and write a COVID-19 poem. They've been actually responding to myself in isolation, myself in quarantine, and going deep within myself about how I actually feel, what I'm experiencing. I'm experiencing anger. I'm experiencing anxiety. There's a fear, and these are realities, and I am going to be transparent because there are many of us experiencing these things. And like I told a family member, I said, and a friend of over nearly 60 years, I said, I want to die of a natural old age. I don't want it to be the result of COVID-19. So yeah. My sense of taking care of myself, keeping safe, has heightened. I've always taken care of myself, but this is really heightened, and I take extreme precautions. And it's really nothing extreme, but I take real precautions.
It makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a fear. It's interesting that you don't specifically want to write about that, but sometimes all of a sudden you find yourself writing because of a certain situation, I imagine, that you're going through and the emotions with it. People want to hear what you have to say. And, you know, you sound like so lovely. I got to say, I interview a lot of people. Not everybody sounds lovely. You know, most people are very nice. But you sound so lovely. You're just like, I want to hug you so badly. And that's the frustration. I can write a poem about my frustration of not even having a handshake since March 21st. And that would be the truth.
There's an expression, it takes one to know one. And
okay.
What I'm taking it to me is that we have similar energy.
I think that's true, yeah.
The goodness of the energy is there, and that's why it's not a struggle. I always say there are some people that you can talk with and you feel as though you've known them forever. And then there are other people you can't get a word. You could be seated next to them and you would have to pull teeth.
You would I know something about that.
You know, my biggest thing is you have to stop me.
No. We like it when
That's
people talk.
That's my biggest thing. You have to stop me. Okay, when is she going to hush up?
No. We like the talkative ones. We like people like you because it's like I love the fact that you're letting things flow out of you unabashed. And that's what writing poetry is about. It's all about metaphors, right? The metaphors of life. When you were a little girl, did you find that either one of your parents was communicated to you in such a way that was poetic? Usually it's a genetic thing that gives you the talent and the impetus to express.
Both of my parents, from what I understand, I know definitely about my mother. I was raised in a single parent household, but I knew my father. He was very present in my life, and he was around.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what's the point of not even living with us? You might as well just come with your hair practically every day for dinner.
Yeah, why not? There you go. Might as well stay.
But they had a wonderful friendship, and it was wonderful. Everything worked out. Everything was fine. But my mother was a writer. And my mother, during the Harlem Renaissance in the 30s and 40s, my mother started in the South, but my mother was known as a hoochie coochie dancer.
Oh, that's nice.
She danced with the big bands. And prior to the band coming out, my mother would come out sort of Josephine Baker style.
And warm them up.
She would give us performances all the time and show us exactly what she did. And we would say, oh,
you'd be like,
we
Mother!
Loved it.
Yes.
We loved it. We enjoyed it. She would just do a hoochie-coochie shake dance and then shake herself on off the stage, and that was it. But my mother was a writer. She loved writing what she did. She loved writing about her love of her family and especially her children.
Well, I would challenge you. I wish we had more time. You're going to have to come back on the show. Promise me you'll come back because I want to talk to you more. But I can imagine you could write some beautiful poetry, some beautiful writings about your mother. Just the way just the tone of your voice, I can tell that it was really something. You've got the performance bug in you.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I can feel it. I can feel it all the way. You're going to be in Climbing the Walls, which is being directed and produced by Mara Mills, and she's one of my favorite people. She talked to her. She'll tell us we have a past together that we didn't know about. We know some people from our way past, and it was a big coincidence. I'm really proud to be in the same bill with you.
And I'm also going to be in Climbing the Walls, Studio Theater in Exile, and Hudson Valley Mocha. They're collaborating together. It's Climbing the Walls and Riding the Walls with Joanne Brody. So they're doing a collaboration together. So I'm participating in both. I have work on exhibit at Riding the Walls. There's going to be an audio of me reciting a poem. And there's going to be a poem of mine actually posted.
Okay.
And so they're doing a collaboration, so I'm excited about that, but I definitely wanted to get that in.
Yeah, thank you.
I can't get off of your show until I have thanked Myra Mills, Jeremy Gray, Albert Corelli, Isis, Kenny, Studio Theater in Exile, and Hudson Valley Mocha. I must thank them, and absolutely, I must thank you, Tony Quest.
Oh, it's my
for
pleasure.
For this wonderful opportunity to come on your program and share myself with your lovely audience.
Well, thank you so much. What's your website, Lorraine? How can people find you?
Oh, people can find me. If you're looking for me on Twitter, you're going to find me under Bronx Book Fair, or you're going to find me on Twitter under Lorraine Corelli on Twitter. But what you're going to find is my mental health organization, which is Mental Health and Healthy Aging. I address mental health and aging issues. I'm what's called an age influencer, and I'm an activist. I'm an age activist.
Oh, wow.
An advocate. Mm-hmm.
So we'll definitely have to get you back to talk about that.
And you can find me in Poets and Writers Directory.
Okay. And all right. And tell the audience you're the executive director of...
I'm the executive director for Poets Network and Exchange, and I'm also the executive director for the Bronx Book Fair. You can find me Bronx Book Fair. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook as well. We're updating a lot of things. We're updating on that, but you can still find me. And if you have any problems finding me, all you have to do, and this is a little out of the way, but you can Google me and everything about me comes up there. You'll be able to contact me.
That's the best way to do it. Then you won't miss anything. You'll get it all. Well, I thank you so much for coming on the show. And I am just like really very, very honored to have you on. And I'll tell the audience, if you want to learn more about Lorraine Corelli, you can go to www.bronxbookfair.com. You can also go to her email address is lorrainecorelli@gmail.com, and that's Lorraine, L-O-R-R, AINECURRELLEY @gmail.com. And if you just Google Lorraine Corelli with that spelling, CURRELLEY, you will find, you'll get all the goods on her. And I thank you so much. And I want to talk to you about your mental health advocacy endeavors on our next show. I'm looking forward to talking to you about that, Lorraine.
Thank you.
And also, she'll be on Climbing the Walls, which is the next thing that's happening at the MoCA through Mara Mills and Studio Theater in Exile. And also, she'll be affiliating her work this month with the Poetry Matters Project. And so that's where you'll find Lorraine, but Google her. And I thank you, Lorraine, for coming to the show.
Thank you.
It's been a complete honor for me. I thank you so much. And we will be talking in the very, very foreseeable future, because we've become like collaborators by default.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Come back to the show, Lorraine. I want us to talk to you again. And for the audience, thank you so much for visiting the Energy Stoners Cafe. And I love doing this show, and it makes me very happy, and I really appreciate you tuning in to listen. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.